Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Guardian of Magic by Jessica Wayne. Narrated by Stephanie Rose. Chapter 1. King Clarence stared out over his city as a cool breeze blew the strands of his dark hair from his face. Cambria was truly alive tonight with the celebration of the coming fall. His people were laughing and dancing below, not worrying about anything going on outside the safety of their high, golden walls. If only he was awarded the same luxury.
Your Majesty, we need to talk about this threat.
Turning, Clarence faced his council. 5 people who were appointed by his father to advise him. They were supposed to be the wisest of the wisest in the realm. People without families or any other distractions that would sway their way of thinking. Yet, all he saw when he looked at them were 5 underqualified aristocrats, terrified of anything that might affect their posh way of life. What made them so qualified to advise him? His father had practically allowed the council to run the kingdom itself, only wanting to bed women and drink ale as if it were water. He'd ignored his family and his kingdom's issues, allowing the council to take the lead on all matters. Even as a young boy, Clarence decided when it was his turn to rule, he'd allow them to advise him, but nothing more. The kingdom and its people were his responsibility, no one else's. Rubbing his hands over his eyes, Clarence sighed.
We've been hearing of this threat for the past 10 years,
he told them.
What makes this time any different from the last 100?
Madame Tybalt cleared her throat, and he turned to her. She was the youngest of the council, had been brought on only a year ago, when her predecessor disappeared. Of all the members, she was the one he least respected, which had nothing to do with her lack of experience, and everything to do with the disrespect and disregard she showed him as king. If it were solely up to him, he would have replaced her within the first month of her service. But, alas, the king wrote it into the laws that the council governed the council and would only replace their members upon their passing or when their interests no longer aligned with the betterment of Cambrexia. She narrowed her green eyes on him.
This time it follows the destruction of the Academy.
I thought you already determined an ex-guardian was behind the attack. Didn't you send someone after him? What if it's more than that?
Councilman Bracar answered, his beady eyes darting around the room. Frustrated, Clarence turned to fully face him.
Who do you suppose is behind it, then? If not the ward, then who? And why would you order the assassination of a man if you weren't absolutely sure it was he who committed the act?
He asked, irritated.
I believe ordering the death of an innocent man is murder. Is it not?
Councilman Bracar scoffed.
The ward is hardly innocent. We had good information about that. And being that he was the only one to survive that night.
He was seen riding away from the Academy as it burned,
Madame Tybalt interrupted.
If he were innocent, why have we not heard from him?
Probably because you ordered his murder.
They were asking him to close the gates, to seal off Cambria, and let the rest of the realm fend for itself. His father might have taken their advice without issue. But Clarence refused to walk away from the rest of his people, even if that meant putting himself at risk. Not that he believed anything was truly coming. The threat for a magical overthrow had always been there, but it was typically nothing more than a few radicals who were handled by the Magic Council before anything serious took place.
Have you contacted the Magics about this supposed threat?
He asked. All 5 council members looked at each other before shaking their heads as a collective.
We asked for their help before, and they refused us.
King Clarence pinched the bridge of his nose.
Then who do you suppose is behind this threat? Who else?
Councilman Aslow growled.
The Magic Council. They have that half-breed and the sage on a leash. Who's to say they aren't on their way here now?
Clarence pinched the bridge of his nose again. If they kept on with this, his head might explode. The thought nearly made him chuckle. The looks on these cowards' faces as they were covered in blood. They'd probably shit themselves.
As far as I know, those two have only ever been seen in Cambria once, and it was when you hired them. Did they not perform their duties and leave? We haven't heard back from the sage yet,
Brakkar told him.
What if she won't kill the eldest ward boy because they're working together? She would be a formidable enemy alone. And if she has the power of the magics on her side, she could be unstoppable. If that's the case, then why haven't we seen them again? Why did we receive word that the ward was killing vampires and werewolves? If he were working in secret with the magics, wouldn't he want as many on his side as possible? Seems to me, killing them would go against the plans you've laid out for him.
Your Majesty, we cannot take the risk. Sealing Cambria's gates is the only way to ensure your safety.
And yours. You would have me segregate us from the rest of the realm? What of them? If there is an attack coming, why would I keep the rest of my people from seeking sanctuary here?
The attack at the gate was just the beginning. We lost 24 of our best men. Would you have us continue to lose more?
A few loose wolves is not something to seal the gates over.
A few loose wolves?
Madame Tybalt stood and slammed her hands down on the wooden table.
Your Majesty, there were over 24 of them. That's an entire clan of werewolves who believed they could overthrow our gates. Do you truly not see a problem?
They did not succeed,
he insisted.
They were stopped at the gate just as every other threat has been. Cambria has never fallen. Not one time in the entire history of our realm have our golden walls been painted in the blood of our people.
But what if they hadn't been?
She put her hands on her hips, much in the way his mother used to do when she chastised him. He'd be damned if a member of his council would do the same. Lowering his voice, he placed his hands on the table in front of him.
They didn't. If there was an issue, don't you believe the Magic Council would be reaching out? Should the realm fall, they are in just as much danger as we are.
The Magic Council refused to come to our aid. They completely ignored our call for help when the wolves were at the door,
Madame Tybalt insisted.
Because there is no real threat.
Clarence slammed his hands down on the table, and to his delight, she jumped.
The first and foremost mission of this council is to ensure your safety, Your Majesty,
Aslow said.
We will do so at whatever cost necessary. The cost of my people is too high a price. I won't pay it. Your Majesty,
Brakkar started.
No. It is my decision to leave the gates open for any who wish to seek safety within its walls. Place extra guards if you choose, but I refuse to deny entry to my people, simply because you are concerned, for the 100th time, that something is coming.
We don't have the extra guards.
Madame Rosalind's golden eyes stared him down with the experience of over 24 of service to the crown.
How many guardians have disappeared, gone missing, or been killed? They are a dying race, Your Majesty. And soon, we will have no one to protect our city.
Then appoint new guards. Can we not find able-bodied men willing to put their lives on the line to protect their families? It has only ever been guardians, Your Majesty.
Councilman Brakkar insisted. Clarence sighed.
Then perhaps it is time for a change.
He turned back to his balcony and rested his hands on the railing. Somewhere below, a child was laughing, running through the streets, and Clarence closed his eyes, absorbing the sound. He and his wife had been unable to conceive a child of their own just yet. And tonight, a healer had informed him that it was unlikely they ever would. What had he been forced to do after receiving the news? Leave his crying wife in their bedchamber to come down here and listen to the same damn thing they'd been yelling about for at least the past decade.
Your Majesty, as it is our duty to keep you safe, we will do what is necessary.
Clarence turned to Aslow.
This is my kingdom. You will do as I say.
I'm afraid he is right, Your Majesty, Madame said softly.
Clarence narrowed his eyes as she produced a leather-bound book he'd only seen twice in his life. Once when he was a boy, and the next when he'd been announced as king. According to our laws, the council can, temporarily, make decisions despite the king's orders.
We will be closing those gates,
Aslow said,
whether you agree or not. Your safety is this council's number one priority. You will not,
Clarence roared.
Those are my people beyond the wall. We will not be shutting down the city when they need us as well.
The guardians who had been out on mission have already been called back. They will be arriving in 3 days. We've sent word to the surrounding villages, offering them a safe haven, and should they choose to accept, we will allow them inside the gates as long as they arrive in the designated time.
He couldn't believe it. They'd gone behind his back. Face flushed with anger, he clenched his fists.
This is unacceptable! I am king!
Yes, you are, but we are your council, tasked with keeping the kingdom running and ensuring the survival of all royalty. This is our purpose,
Madame Tebbalt said, the corner of her lips lifted in a smirk.
It is time we take this threat seriously,
Aslow added.
Something is coming, and I, for one, plan to be prepared for it.
Shall we put it to a vote?
Madame Tebbalt reached for the leather-bound book.
In times of great crisis, it is the council's duty to ensure the safety of the realm. Should the king become incapacitated, they may make decisions on his behalf.
Do I look incapacitated?
Clarence roared.
Incapacitated physically or mentally, Tebbalt clarified.
And who gets to decide whether I am mentally capable of making decisions?
Heart thundering, Clarence looked at the faces of people elected to oversee the realm. Traitorous bastards.
You are all relieved of your duty,
Clarence announced, stalking toward them.
I place my vote against the king,
Tebbalt said, without breaking eye contact with him. She held his gaze, and if he wasn't mistaken, this new rule was one she was looking forward to upholding.
As do I,
Aslow said.
As do I.
Councilman Bracar crossed his arms.
As do I.
Madame Rosalind's voice shook as she spoke, but she stood firm in her spot, not letting the emotion show through.
You practically raised me,
he roared.
I looked up to you.
I'm sorry, Clarence, but this is what must be done.
Councilman Plies?
Clarence turned to the elder, whose blue eyes watched him with an unwavering gaze. With a deep breath, the man dipped his head in a nod.
As do I.
You are hereby relieved of your duty. Temporarily, of course.
Madame Tebbalt set the leather-bound book down on the table.
Guardian?
Madame Tebbalt instructed the leader of the guardian force that stood just inside the chamber.
Please escort King Clarence to his chambers. Be sure to stay with him any time he decides to venture outside of his room.
The guardian hesitated for only a moment, looking between Clarence and the council. Finally, he took his first step toward the king. There was fire in her eyes, and Clarence slammed his fists down on the table.
I will not be held prisoner in my own castle!
You don't have a choice.
Bracar, you are the eldest of the council. This cannot be done!
The guardian gripped his bicep, and Clarence glared at him. The elderly man stood.
Actually, Your Majesty, it can. and based on what we've heard, it's necessary. Should this threat come to pass, we will be held liable for the bloodshed, as will you. This will ensure our people's trust stays where it belongs, with their leadership.
Clarence ripped his arm away from the guardian who grabbed it.
This is my castle! Yes, but we are running it until this threat is taken care of.
The guardian grabbed him again.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, but I have my orders.
Clarence gaped at the council as he was pulled to the door by the guardian.
I am king!
He roared.
You cannot do this! It is unfortunate that this was necessary.
Aslo called after him.
But it is the only way to ensure the safety and prosperity of the realm. Let me go!
Clarence growled.
You've had dinner with my wife and me, Phil.
Phil released him, and Clarence straightened his crown and smoothed the front of his tunic. He had to look unfazed when he got back to his room. He wasn't sure his wife could handle much more stress at this time.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty. I can't disobey orders.
The other man's voice was full of sorrow, his face somber, as he leveled his gaze on Clarence. The king took a deep breath.
Fine. I will figure this out.
They reached the door to his chambers, and Clarence took a deep breath before stepping inside. His wife was not in the living area, which meant she might have finally gone to sleep.
May I enter?
Phil asked, and Clarence nodded, stepping aside.
Are you planning on sleeping in here with me as well? Might I make a suggestion? Off duty. And just between us. What? Your Majesty. I knew Daxon Ward. Not well, but well enough to know he would never have ordered an attack that would cause the death of his twin or brothers. What are you saying? I'm saying perhaps you reach out to him. Maybe he knows about what is going on.
Clarence narrowed his eyes.
This does not go against your orders? My orders are to stay with you when you choose to leave. While I cannot break that particular order, I am also under oath to do as you say. Should you need to send a message out, I will be sure it is delivered.
Clarence considered. If the council were right about Daxon Ward's crimes, he could be bringing their enemy right to their door. But if they were wrong, if perhaps the council was corrupt, the ward could prove to be an ally. After all, he had the reputation of being ruthless in battle. He could prove to be an ally to the crown, and right now, Clarence needed allies if he was going to take his kingdom back. Nodding, he looked up at Phil.
Do it. Tell him what has happened, and that the crown needs assistance. That I need his help. As you wish.
Chapter 2.
You've got to be fucking kidding me, Ward.
Zane glared back at him, and Daxon rolled his eyes.
She needs a break. She's a fucking healer.
He turned his murderous gaze to the young woman who lowered her gaze to the ground in response.
Heal yourself, and let's get a move on.
Daxon shook his head and carefully removed Jacqueline's black riding gloves. Ouch, she whispered, wincing as he turned her hands over to study the palms.
Sorry, these are pretty bad.
Her delicate hands were covered in large blisters. The skin around the pustules was bright red and hot to the touch.
I take it you've never ridden very far before?
She shook her head and winced. Typically, we're in the carriage.
For fuck's sake!
Zane called, before the thundering of his horse's footsteps filled the silent afternoon. He jumped down beside Daxon.
Let me fucking see.
He looked down and shook his head.
Fucking healers.
Biting down on his wrist, he held it up to her, blood dripping from the new wound. Jacqueline turned pale and stared at it. You're not serious.
I am. And if you don't drink it to heal your weak-ass hands, I will shove it down your throat. Zane,
Daxon warned. He wanted to get to the academy as quickly as the half-breed, but scaring the shit out of a young healer was hardly the right way to go about it. especially when they needed her to take care of Sienna. Zane glared at Daxon, his hands balling into fists.
Don't you fucking Zane me. She's holding us back. We should have left her to the wolves.
I'm not even supposed to be here, she whispered, shrinking back closer to Daxon. Zane's upper lip lifted in a snarl.
Well, you are. We're keeping you alive because we need your help. So until then, you damn well better stop complaining and just fucking deal. Otherwise, I might just drain you and be fucking done with it.
He shoved his wrist at her, and she stared at it, wide-eyed and terrified, shaking her head and pressing as far back as she could get. Pissed off, Daxon slammed his palms into Zane's chest, shoving him back a few steps. The half-breed's eyes flared bright red, and Daxon stepped toward him.
You aren't the only person with someone to lose,
Daxon growled.
I care about Sienna, too. But intimidating Jacqueline and acting like the biggest fucking asshole in the realm is not the way to go about getting her back. Yeah, you made it real fucking clear how much you care when you threatened to kill her. Or have you conveniently forgotten that threat? Or the fact that you are the fucking reason she was pumped full of arrows and possibly killed?
Daxon swallowed hard but didn't respond. He'd never forget the look on her face when he'd said that to her. Never forget the pain in his chest as he walked away, or the agony he'd felt staring down at the blood-covered ground and knowing it was hers.
Besides, it's not just Sienna's ass on the line anymore, Ward. Or have you so quickly forgotten Corinne?
Ever since she'd gone off with the wolves the night Sienna was taken, Zane had been even more of an insufferable ass than usual. Narrowing his eyes, Daxon glared at Zane.
Careful, vamp, or else I might start to think you actually care about someone other than yourself.
Zane smiled back, but it was feral. His canines slid down, and he bared them at Daxon.
I do care for Corinne. I won't hide that. But I don't give two shits about you, Ward. Best to remember that.
Daxon rolled his eyes.
Don't lie to yourself, Zane. You care about me, or you would have eaten me already. Don't care much for the taste of Guardian. I'd probably just chop your head off and leave you to the wolves. They'll eat anything lying around.
Daxon threw his head back and laughed, grateful the tense moment was over. If it came to a fight, he wasn't entirely sure who would win. Luckily, Zane's sage battle magic wouldn't work on Daxon, thanks to his Guardian bloodline. But the vamp was freaky fast and had the ability to stop time. It was best for everyone involved if the situation remained diffused. Walking back to Jacqueline, he ripped the sleeves off his tunic and tied one piece around each of her hands.
You can ride with me for now,
he said softly. It wasn't that he particularly cared for the extra weight. If she wasn't with them, he and Zane would have already reached the academy. But leaving her behind meant leaving her to die. And while he was a selfish bastard, he wasn't a murderer. Besides, Sienna's blood had been all over the ground after she'd been taken, and they'd found a broken arrow beside it. Best case scenario, she more than needed a healer. Worst case? Well, he wasn't going to think too much on that. After tying the reins of Sienna's horseback to his saddle, he lifted Jacqueline up onto Shadow's strong back and climbed on in front of her. She wrapped her arms around his waist and leaned against his back, relaxing. The whole fucking thing made him uncomfortable, but she couldn't ride with Zane because he would probably eat her.
Let's get going. We're only about 2 days from the bridge,
Zane called, climbing back on his horse.
You honestly think walking across the bridge is the best plan? It's wide open on all sides. Whoever took her will be able to clearly see us coming.
Zane glared at him.
Of course, that's a shit idea. Anyone with half a fucking brain would see that. We aren't crossing the bridge. We're going to swim the river.
Daxon lifted an eyebrow.
You want to swim across the River of Light? I do. It's at least a half mile across, and both sides are huge, jagged cliffs.
Zane grinned, showing all of his teeth.
Exactly. They'll never see us coming. We're also going to pop in during the day. You think there will be vamps? I know there will be vamps.
Zane's hands tightened on the reins, and Daxon turned his attention back to the road. 13 years ago, Zane had rescued Sienna from Daxon's father, Amos, a man who, until recently, Daxon believed was killed during the fall of the Guardian Training Academy less than a year ago. Supposedly, the half-breed had pulled her out of the dungeon of the academy, so if anyone knew how to get in and out undetected, it would be the vamp.
So, my father, a man who hated all magical creatures, kept vamps around? There is a lot about that bastard you just don't know, Ward. That why you hate me so damn much? Pretty much. I'm not like him. I never was. After seeing what he did...
Zane stopped his horse and turned to stare at Daxon.
And just what did you see? He killed a family of wolves. That's it? That's what made you turn your back on your entire heritage?
Zane scoffed.
One was my friend.
Daxon replied dryly. Zane shook his head and urged his horse forward again.
If that was the worst you saw, you got lucky. Lucky? I was 7, and he beheaded the entire family in front of me. I'm not saying that's a sunny day, Ward. I'm just saying it gets a lot worse. Then tell me. You want me to tell you about your psychopathic father? Do you truly want to have this conversation? I really do.
Daxon insisted. He'd heard bits and pieces, but not the whole story. If he was to truly believe the man he grew up with was even more of a monster than he'd previously thought, he wanted to hear it. He wanted proof. Zane shrugged.
Fine. Not like we don't have a lot of time.
He glared back at the young healer before turning his attention back to Daxon.
What would you like to know? Start at the beginning.
Chapter 3. 6-year-old Zane stared down at his tray. The brown, wiggly mound of food was the only thing he knew, but that didn't make it any more appetizing. He sat alone today, like all days. None of the other kids wanting to sit beside the half-breed who'd killed his mother. Zane sniffled, not wanting the other kids to see the sadness on his face, especially not Amos. Eyes narrowed, Zane stared across the room at the older boy, who sat with a group of other boys, laughing and pointing at him. They were always laughing at him. Zane clenched his fists, feeling the surge of power that came from his mother's side. According to sages who ran the orphanage, his vampire half made him more powerful than a typical sage. Taking a deep breath, Zane shoved his rage back down. The last thing he wanted was to spend another week in the box. It was a dark, damp closet, and each day kids would run by banging on the locked door, laughing at whoever happened to be locked inside. Not that anyone but he ended up in there. He'd heard rumors the sages created it especially for him. Staring back down at his food, Zane took the first bite, choking down the fatty mixture. He didn't see Amos until he was right in front of him.
Hello, abomination.
Please, leave me alone,
Zane mumbled. Anytime he ended up in the box, it was because Amos started it.
Why would I do that?
Amos slapped Zane's tray, sending it flying off the table and clattering to the floor. Zane jumped to his feet, bawling his fists, prepared for a fight. Amos laughed wildly.
What are you going to do with those?
He slapped Zane's fist, and Zane's eyes became cloudy with tears. Amos pulled out his blade, the shiny tip bringing a new level of fear to Zane. He dropped his fists and turned to run, but the other kids had circled behind him.
What's wrong, abomination?
Don't you want a new scar?
Zane shook his head.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?